So we'll get started. Can you guys hear me all right? Yes? Cool. In case you guys have some short-term memory loss, we're still in Las Vegas, we're still in Link 2014. Welcome to the debugging session, and or as we'd like to call it, find the monkey. How to find the monkey. So my name is Prashant Venkatraman. I'm basically a dev in the UCWA team, and I'm joined by my colleague Ganesh Sridharan. He's the dev lead who owns both UCWA and UCMA. And in this particular session, we'll be talking about two specific APIs, which is UCWA, Unified Communications Web API, and UCMA, which is the Managed API. Now, the flow of the presentation will be, we'll be first answering some of the very frequently asked encountered issues regarding both the protocols. We'll just give you an overview regarding that, and then probably a tiny, some guideline about how to troubleshoot and find the root causes of the problems. Now, at the end of the session, we're going to have a 15-minute Q&A. That doesn't stop you from asking, raising your hands and asking questions in the middle. Just a quick note. So in case you hadn't noticed, Ganesh Sridharan's designation said senior dev lead. He's in fact my lead. So don't ask me any tough questions and put me on the spot. That's not cool. So what we won't cover, the provisioning and deployment in detail, the CLS logging, which is centralized logging system in Link Server, how to use Fiddler, and UCJA debugging. I think Albert and Alex introduced UCJA yesterday in the TAP program, so don't ask any questions regarding UCJA. And so let's get on with it. So UCWA, the first most troublesome issue that we keep getting asked questions regarding is the sign-in flow. It is pretty complicated, and there are a couple of caveats and workarounds that you guys need to know. So I wanted to spend some time explaining in detail the sign-in flow of UCWA. So as with any deployment, first you do a GET on the linkdiscover.yourdomain.com. Now, this is an unauthenticated request, and it comes back with a 200, and it should give you a user token. Now, the user token, if you can see here, it points to AutoDiscover service. So AutoDiscover service in Link Server is nothing but a service discovery service, and it's a bit of irony that you need the first GET on LinkDiscover to actually find the service discovery service. But as soon as you grab the URL from the AutoDiscover service and do a GET on it, it's going to throw you a 401 challenge, because from this point on, all your communications should be authenticated. So it's going to give you a 401 challenge. And the way to the next steps would be to look at the www authenticate header. It's going to give you a MSRTC OAuth token, and it's going to point you to WebTicket service. So if you see here, this is the other service that you'll be talking to. WebTicket service in Link Server is a service which helps you get a token based on your credentials. It supports multiple authentication types. It supports grant type of OAuth, password, passive, and multiple. But for the talk, I'm going to focus on the OAuth flow. So you grab the www authenticate header and then basically do a post on the WebTicket service. And it's with your credentials. So right now I'm putting in plain text. It's a user and his password is 07 apples, very secure. But he's going to come back with, sorry. So he's going to come back to you with an access token, which is the CWT stands for Compact Web Ticket. So this is your token for any communication to any web service in Link Server from this point of time. So what you basically do is grab the CWT value and stuff it in the header. Now, you remember the original request which gave you the 401 challenge, right? The AutoDiscover request. So you go back to the URL and you stuff the header and you do the GET again. Now it's going to succeed, hoping you have the right credentials. And you'll get back the application's URL, which is your gateway to UCWA. So my point to note that till this point of time, you haven't hit UCWA. This is all the steps you have to do just to, you know, get the UCWA URL. And once you get the UCWA URL, you guys should be familiar with the protocol. You basically do a post on that particular URL with three compulsory parameters, which is endpoint ID, user agent, and culture, right? And so you go ahead and do that, and you should be good to go. Now, 201 created, UCWA will give you an application dashboard where you can start initiating your communications, etc. Now, there is a caveat that I wanted to spend some time about. Now, if you ask the customers, they call it a bug. If you ask the developers back in Link Server, it's an undocumented feature. There is a thin line between the bug and the undocumented feature, but I wanted to explain this to you guys so that you know how to work around it. Now, when, so let me go back here. When you do a GET on the AutoDiscover, with the credentials. It's going to come back with a response body. Now, the client should be written. You see the self href here. The client should always compare the host of this part. Like in our example, it is the link0b.linkweb.microsoft.com. That's the host of the URL. You should always compare the host of the response with the host of the request you originally sent out. Now, if these two are different, like not the entire domain part, but the first part, like link0b part is different, then that means that you have hit another pool. So just to give some context, in an on-prem deployment, each of your pools are individually addressable from the outside. So what can happen is you can send a request to a.contoso.com, and you can get back a self URL with b.contoso.com. Now, this is where the customers usually get confused and hit a lot of issues. So if you go ahead and use the application's link from that and post it, it would fail with a 500 internal server error. So keep in mind, when you do a get to a.contoso.com and you get back b.contoso.com, you have to repeat the previous two steps. So what that essentially means is you do a get on the self URI again. It's going to give you another 401 challenge. You go grab the web ticket, take that, and then follow the link. So it's just the repetition of the two steps. So anybody has any questions regarding this? Because this is very, very important, because we've seen literally almost all of our customers hit this in on-prem deployments. So just to summarize, do a get on link discover, get back the user token, which will point to auto discover, do a get on that, you'll get a 401 challenge, get the web ticket, grab the web ticket, stuff it in the header, go to auto discover again, he'll give you back the self URI. If it is different, repeat the last two steps, and then follow it to hit the UCWA. We hadn't documented it originally in uciwa.link.com, but we are right now making an effort to document this explicitly in the website. Our PM, Alex, who did the last talk, is in charge of documentation. So any documentation not updated, you can go nag him. He's responsible for it. So the next slide basically talks about the caveat, the undocumented feature I just spoke about. So if the auto discover returns a separate one, repeat the last two steps, you're all good. Now, when I mentioned the flow, I talked about three services, right? Your link discover, which is an unauthenticated. After that, you go hit the auto discovery service, and then you hit the web ticket service. Just for some context, every web service in Link Server is built on top of this infrastructure module called web infrastructure. Now, web infrastructure is not a service as such. It is just a module, and it is responsible for doing two things, proxying and authentication. So if you hit any authentication issues, my point with this is like you not hit UCWA yet. UCWA will never try to authenticate you, right? Web infra will give you the challenge. So the really good troubleshooting tip is if you see a HTML or an IIS page error, that means your request hasn't even hit UCWA. That means you're most likely your request has failed because of two reasons: authentication or the pool you're trying the request is being proxied to is down. Right? So keep in mind, and for both these services, AutoDiscover and Web Infrastructure, look for the XMS diagnostics header. It is going to explicitly give you a reason and an error code about why they failed your request. Now, this is like a tiny snapshot of what happened. If you see here, the reason is the web ticket is invalid. Now, if you had gone from the AutoDiscover directly without checking the host part of the domain, this is the request this is the response you'll get. And this is where usually the customer is like, hey, I got a valid web ticket, what happened, right? And the next important piece of troubleshooting, if your request hits UCWA, we will always, always give you an error resource. I'm going to be talking extensively about error resource in some time, but error resource is nothing but a JSON payload that is formatted by UCWA in a very particular structure. Now, before I talk about the error resource and the troubleshooting for UCWA, I wanted to spend like a couple of minutes regarding the jargon that usually people use, command channel versus event channel, right? So I wanted to spend a couple of minutes. So in UCWA, you know, the request response that you send on the wire, like, hey, give me this person's photo, send an IM to this person, is through command channel. We call it as command channel, right? And you have a notification system in UCWA, which is basically called as the event channel. Event channel is nothing but you park a get, you send a get request to that particular URI, and it's a long-standing get. Now, it'll be parked in UCWA for around like 5 to 10 minutes maximum, and that is our channel where we give all the notification details to you. like, hey, this guy's presence is updated. You know, you have received an incoming call from so on and so forth. So that is called as the event channel. Now, whenever people give presentations, I think Alex gave just right before this, and a couple of other UCR presentations were done. They'll refer to these jargons: command channel, event channel, or synchronous APIs or asynchronous APIs. So, what are synchronous APIs? Synchronous APIs are nothing but APIs that do not need the event channel to work. For example, if you're asking for a person's photo, in the response to the request, we'll give you the photo, right? You don't have to wait for anything on the notification perspective. Same thing with presence. Hey, give me that guy's presence. We'll give you the presence immediately. You don't have to wait for the event channel. I'm going to be explaining, similarly, online meeting scheduling, which is actually a powerful API. Even that does not need the event channel to work. So that's basically a synchronous API. So this is how the flow goes. You do a post to online meetings with the parameters you want to create, like, hey, this is my subject, this is the access level I want the conference to be created with, and we give back 200 okay, and with the meeting information, right? There was nothing you had to wait for in the event channel. So this is a pure and pure synchronous slash command channel API. Now let's talk about asynchronous APIs. Asynchronous APIs are nothing but, we have another term for it that you probably have to know. People usually refer to it as resource operations. So resource operations, you can think about any dynamic APIs. Like, you're talking, communication is a very dynamic space. It's just not a request response, right? So you send, these are all the resource operations we currently have in UCR, all the invitations, messaging, online meetings, send message, which is like sending a message, and present subscriptions and contact group subscriptions. All these are asynchronous APIs. Now, asynchronous APIs, the rule of thumb is they need the event channel for it to work. So just to show a flow, this is your parked event channel, pending get, the hanging get. This is already parked. Now you do a post to create an online meeting. You join an online meeting invitation. You say, you send a post to online meeting invitations with, say, hey, this is the operation ID, this is the online meeting URI that I want to join, and it's going to come back with 201. That's it. It doesn't give you much information, right? It'll give you a location header with the href of the resource it is creating, right? But you don't have much information in the command channel itself regarding what happened to the resource which got created. Now, all the information for the resource which got created will come to you in the event channel. So you see the first, you do a get here, like the previous park pget, that will complete here with a payload, right? And it'll say, hey, the online meeting invitation which got created has completed with successfully or failure or it failed. But my point is, asynchronous operations always need the event channel to complete. Bulk of the notification system will be given to you in the event channel. Any questions? Either I'm presenting really well or you guys are not getting anything. I'm going to assume the first part. Thank you, sir, asking questions.
So the helper library that was discussed previously, that takes care of, so my guess could be,
It should.
No.
I think the helper library already takes care of parking the pgets, getting the payload, and parking the next pget. So it is kind of abstracted to you, but in terms, when you're trying to troubleshoot UCY, it is good to know the details so that you know what is happening on this end. But Shelby and Alex already did the work.
Another point to add to that is that the helper libraries, the way they're designed, is they actually take care of doing the get, waiting on it, which doesn't really have to do that much. When the get completes, it will parse the response. And our programming model there is you actually hook up handlers or listeners that say, if this kind of event appears in the payload, call my function once it's done doing all of that dispatching, and then goes ahead and does the next get automatically for you. So all you have to do is tell it, hey, I want you to be my event channel monitor, and here are the kind of events I'm interested in. There's a whole bunch of events you may not be interested in, and it will politely parse them, see there's no handler, and just skip over them.
We got you covered. So let's move on to the next. And this is also another very good troubleshooting tip regarding UCWA. So typically, people expect UCWA to give error resource or information regarding the error only when the clients try to do something and it fails. But UCWA also guarantees or helps in such a state that any unexpected state transition, we will inform you what it is. And as an example, what I've shown here is, consider yourself you're in a meeting, right? And the organizer is sitting around, and you guys are having a chat in the conference, and the organizer kicks you out. So in the protocol side, all you're going to receive is a conversation disconnected event and a conversation deleted event. Now, typically, you don't know what that means. You don't know how it happened. But since it's an unexpected state transition, UCWA will give you information regarding what happened. So if you see here, right above my head, it's a code, error code is informational, subcode is ejected. So it's a FII error, hey, you got ejected, nothing bad happened on the server side or you didn't do anything wrong. Someone has kicked you out, you should probably go talk to that person, right? So I'll be talking, this is basically our error resource. I'll be talking about what the error resource is and how you should consume it in a bit, but I just wanted to show that any unexpected state transition, we'll give you information if we find out what happens. All right, let's talk about error resource. It sounds complicated, but it isn't. It's basically, it has four parts to it. It has an error code, it has an error subcode, it has a message, and, although my pointer stuck. Okay, and it has something called as a debug info. I'll be going in detail regarding these in a minute, but let's talk about error codes. Error codes are very broad categories, right? They don't essentially give you much information if you don't take into context the other information in the error resource. You can consider error codes like informational, it's an FII, remote failure, someone on the other side screwed up, local failure, hey dude, you screwed up. And error codes are basically, again, talking about the synchronous and asynchronous APIs. Error codes are basically, you can see that some of the synchronous error codes are exclusively to exclusively for synchronous APIs, like bad request, 400 bad request, and gateway timeout, 504, you couldn't even reach the server, and gone is 410 application gone, you didn't park a pget, so that we killed you, right? But you should see, you should also see that error codes are shared between asynchronous and synchronous APIs. One such example is service failure here. Service failure just means, hey, something wrong happened on the server side. We don't have much information, but the information that we're trying to convey to you is you didn't do anything wrong. Something happened on the server side, right? So you can see that even on the async error code, service failure is shared with the synchronous. So the second part to the error resource is error subcodes. Oh, one more important part that I wanted to say is error codes are programmatically valid. The clients who are consuming the API can program against it. What I mean is, for example, if you've seen any of the demos in the keynote, or if you use the mobile clients or Elva, if something wrong happens, there's a yellow banner which says, hey, we are hitting network issues, or your mic has been muted. Where does the client get that information? From this, right? So you can code against this. What I mean is, like, if error code equal to informational and error subcode equal to ejected, I will display this string to the clients, right? You can code against it. And error subcodes, just like error codes, they are also very valid. You can program against it. UCWA will make sure that we don't break any existing client scenarios with that. And error subcodes, in order to make sense of what the error subcode means, you have to take it into account with the error code. It doesn't generally give you any much information by itself. And some of the examples of error subcodes are application not found, deserialization failure, like something, like if you see these error subcodes, you won't get much information. What does application not found mean? It'll typically come with a not found as the error code. So that just means that, hey, you had an application with UCWA, either UCWA crashed on the server side or you did not have activity with UCWA for a long time, so we decided to kill you. So this means you can program against this error subcode and say, hey, as soon as I hit application not found, I'll go ahead and create my application one more time so that the client, the user, does not see any fluctuation of experience. Now, I put et cetera here because there are more than 60 to 70 error subcodes. Right? So my point is it's an ever-growing enum. We'll keep adding more error subcodes as and when we find more scenarios to convey to the client, hey, this is what happened. All right, messages.
One other point I want to add to that error subcode is that there are documentation around, there's documentation around every error subcode. Some of them requires you to take an action from your side, just like Prashant said, like if you see an application not found, the code should be written in such a way that you should be able to create another application. Some of the error subcodes require you to provide that information to the user. And the third category of error subcodes are something really bad happened. One other tip is that when you're developing, I found very useful when I'm developing a UCWA application, most of the times the number one thing I will get it wrong is I'll give an input which is not either well formatted, or I have given an input which server is not expecting, so it's just a 400 bad request.
I'm actually covering that as a separate
slide.
He's talking about this error subcode called parameter validation failure. I'm actually explicitly covering it one more time. We'll get to it in a second.
Okay.
So messages, as you saw previously, it's something like, hey, it's a string. But so you cannot program against the scrim in the sense you can't do string.equals the contact server administrator. We have the right to change the string anytime. Like you know, if we improve our English, we'll probably have a better error string. So don't program against that. The really cool part about messages that you can program against is they are localized. So if you remember, when you created the application with UCIVA, you specified a culture. That culture is not useless. We actually use that information. So every message that you receive from UCIVA will be localized to the culture that you provided. That's actually really cool. So consider this is how a mobile client works, right? So if you are in Brazil and you create you sign in into your mobile client, it will internally send PTBR, which I think is the Brazilian culture, and every request, every error string that UCIVA gives will be localized for you for free. So you don't have to worry about taking the string, trying to convert it into a language, and then displaying it to the user. You can guarantee, you can program against the fact that UCIVA will localize it for you. And I think currently Link Server and Microsoft support around 55 to 56 cultures. So you have 55 languages to for free translation. If it's any other language, it's good that you're reaching out that far. Just let us know. We'll probably add it to our matrix as well. And like I said, so the only thing that the clients can take a dependency on is the fact that UCIVA will localize the message for you for free. All right, parameter validation failure. This is what Ganesh was referring to. And before talking about this, I wanted to tell you a tiny story regarding Alex. So when I joined the team, when we are midway of UCIVA, we basically had a usability study. So what we did basically here was invited 50 to 60 web developers from all sorts of expertise, all sorts of age, to get a different sample size. And what we basically did was we put them in a room, we gave them the API, we gave them tons of documentation in PDF format, in online HTML format, and in paper format. And we said, play around with our API and let us know how our API looks. The one thing that we found for the entire 2 weeks duration of the usability study was not one developer even looked at the documentation. And everyone was like, hey, is this a web API? Yeah. Is it a REST API? Okay, let me play around with it. The way they play around with it is poke this, what happens? Then poke the next URL, what happens? This is typically how they did it, and it was a very big learning experience for us. And this was the inspiration for us to do parameter validation failure. We wanted to help you Slack and not read documentation. So what we basically did was, it's a synchronous error subcode. It's always going to come with a 400 bad request. So what it does is, if you hit a URL and you don't give the right parameters or the wrong methods, we will tell you what you did wrong. So you can still not read documentation, play around with UCIVA, and get comfortable. So as an example, remember a few slides back, I said post on applications basically has three compulsory parameters: the endpoint ID, the culture, and the user agent string of the client. Now, I've just given the example of, I didn't provide these parameters, and see what happens. And see, if I didn't provide culture, I'm going to give an explicit, UCIVA is going to tell you, hey, culture is missing or invalid, right? If I don't provide endpoint ID, the same thing. And if I don't provide bad request, the same thing. I was in the test side of UCIVA for a little bit before transitioning to dev, and this is how I learned UCIVA. Keep poking the different hrefs, and UCIVA will tell me, hey, what I did wrong, and you can correct yourself after that. All right. Debug info. This is a very powerful part of the error resource, and not many people know about it. We are actually working with Alex to bump up our documentation online regarding this. So what is the debug info? It's just basically a dictionary of key value pairs, right? It doesn't sound much interesting. If it is enabled, we will give you very detailed information about what went wrong. Right? So, by detailed information, I'm talking about exception names, exception call stacks, exception messages. So since we can't enable this by default, this is by default disabled because of legal reasons. But what you can do is, if your on-prem deployment or your IT admin is okay with it, you can add this flag, disclose exception messages explicitly to the web.config where UCIVA is deployed. And after that, you should see very detailed exception messages right in the HTTP protocol. A typical example is you try to ask for a photo of a person, and we in the background go to Exchange. And Exchange says, hey, I don't know what that person, I don't know this person you're referring to. We'll tell you, hey, Exchange foobar, this is the exception that Exchange threw, and these are the details that they want, which you can use to basically troubleshoot your environment or whatnot.
Typically, one thing to add as well is that As a developer, you would also always want it enabled to be true while you're developing and while you're piloting your projects. And once you want to actually deploy it in production, you basically, depending on your policy, you need to continue with being true or actually go back to default as false.
All right, so these are the, so now that I've given you a tiny gist about what error codes is, I just wanted to emphasize the usage of error codes by giving a couple of examples. The one, take the first examples. You have created an app, someone is trying to reach out to you and sends you an invite. You don't want to talk to that person, you decline the invite. Now, what typically happens is here, just like the last time, we give you an error reason of why the message invitation failed, and the reason is local failure declined. So, like I said, error codes, local failure means, hey, something that the user did triggered this failure. And decline gives you more reason that, hey, he has explicitly declined the invite, and that's why you see the messaging invitation failure. If you take another example where just like some guy kicked you out, like if you're sitting around in an online meeting conference talking to people and the organizer just decides to terminate the conference. Now, this is a big deal in the sense when the organizer terminates the conference, every attendee or presenter in the conference will be kicked out, right, without much notice given to them. So here also we try to give you on the server side analyze what happened and give you this error code saying, hey, it's an FII error, ended. The online meeting has been ended by the organizer, so you can pop up a yellow or a blue bar to the user saying, don't worry, this is expected, your organizer has literally terminated the meeting. Now, all this time when I was talking about error resource, and Ganesh also mentioned this is the error resource gives you a lot of freedom to troubleshoot / root cause issues while you are developing and playing around with the API. But if you write your client app in such a way that even after being deployed, if you collect the HTML pages, the web payload of UCIVA, or just store the error messages that returned by UCIVA in your logs or the client app itself, you can root cause pretty much most of the issues what is happening. Now, after deployment, there is the other sort of issues that we usually hit is you've in fact hit a scenario where it's not supported by UCIVA, or you found a bug in UCIVA. Now, typically what you do is you contact someone from the Microsoft PM team and say, hey, this is the issue we're hitting, can you take care of it? Now, what we've noticed in those scenarios is mostly we get the wrong information, right? Like we get some scenario doesn't work, can you help us? Now, that's the bug. Like, as an engineer, that's not enough information. So we go ask them again, saying, hey, can you give us more information about what is happening? Can you give us this traces? Can you give us a scenario, et cetera, et cetera? So the point that I'm trying to make is 99% of the time is wasted on the PR go back and forth between the PMs and the on-prem deployment. So we want to reduce the time so that, you know, it's a win-win scenario for both of us. Usually we are very quick in turning around bugs for the on-prem. So before I start telling you how to collect, what logs to collect, I want to give a tiny recap about CLS, which is the Central Logging Service. This was introduced as part of Link Server 2013. Now, if you remember, in 2010, there was this GUI called OCS Logger. So if you had a pool with like 24 FEs and you hit an issue, so basically what the IT admin had to do was start this OCS Logger in all the 24 machines, and then repro the scenario, and then you collect all the 24 log files, and then you aggregate, and then you send it across. So what CLS enables us to do is it basically does that for you for free. So how it basically works is in every front-end server, they have a tiny agent called as the CLS agent, which is running to collect logs, and there is a CLS controller, which has a partial interface that you can code again, say, hey, start logging, collect logging, these are the components I want to do, and it does all the work for you and gives you an ETL or a text file back. Now, you can create custom scenarios. Scenarios are nothing but what components you want to collect at what level. You can say, hey, I want to collect UCIVA at verbose level, collaboration at info level, et cetera. But you don't have to do all that because there is a custom made special scenario called as the always-on scenario. So typically in a Link on-prem deployment, this scenario will be running 24/7, and this has most of the components that are involved in Link Server, and the logs which are being collected are at info level. Right, so this is the tiny recap. I'm not going to go much in detail about CLS logging service. I think there is a session exclusively for that. I can point you to that, or you can just look it up online. There's extensive information about how to use a central logging service in your deployment. All right, headers. So after deployment, Now, the error resource, what I was mentioning, is in the resource payload. Like this is part of the protocol that you talk to UCIVA. Now, we missed headers. So with headers, we actually give you a lot of information that you can use to collect the logs and have it around like much faster round trip. So three of the most important headers that we have is XMS server FQDN, date, which is standard with any HTTP request, and XMS correlation ID. Now, what is XMS server FQDN? Like I told the previous slide, you might have a pool with like 24 to 30 front-end servers. Now, you don't know which FE you're talking to, right? So you'll probably be collecting 24 FE logs and then sending it to us. You don't have to do that. If you see the UCIVA protocol, XMS server FQDN will exclusively tell you what UCIVA on which front-end you're talking to. So you don't have to worry about the rest of the pools or the 23 other machines in the pools. You just have to worry about one particular FE. So the date is nothing but the date timestamp which we sent. You possibly should collect like plus or minus 5 minutes of the logs. The third thing is XMS correlation ID. Now, what is it? So UCIVA is nothing but a web head which is built on top of UCMA. So essentially, if you think about it, Link Server is very SIP-based, and most of all its communication is in the SIP traffic. So typically, each of your web requests gets converted or translated to a SIP request in the backend, right? Now, if you send a request, we want to follow, even in the SIP flow, what is happening. So XMS correlation ID is that particular ID. So the web infrastructure module generates this ID, and it makes sure it plumps this ID in all the transactions in the SIP layer so that you can easily correlate between the two. Now, there are a couple of other headers that you can also use, which are pretty nifty. But the first three, the three headers that I mentioned in the previous slide, should be more than enough for you to just collect logs and get the basic information. Extended headers, we have this header called VIA. So again, if you have a very complicated split domain or a hybrid topology where your request gets hopped to multiple proxies and then eventually reaches the FE, we will tell you about exactly what the route your request takes. If you have a front end down and after all the hops and you say, hey, I can't even reach the front end, you can find out the route that the request took by following the VIA headers. We log a VIA header for each of the hops it took, right? And from the client's perspective, it is always good to log all the headers returned by UCIVA. Now, so one of the very main advantages of UCIVA is it abstracts a lot of things from the client. So if you're asking for someone's photo or someone's contact, you don't know or you don't care whether the user has contacts and photo in Link or the contacts and photo are stored in Exchange. You don't know. You're just talking to UCIVA. In the back end, we'll talk to Exchange. We'll figure out who to talk to, which service to collect the information from and give it to you. The abstraction, so the example that I told you, you ask for someone's photo and Exchange is crashed or Exchange is not running in your deployment. So Exchange will fail and give us a bunch of headers saying, hey, this is why we failed. They don't have a rich error resource like us, so they'll be giving us headers. So what UCIVA does is copies those headers and puts it back to the response. So when you're collecting, when you're getting information, it's always good to collect all the headers from UCIVA, and you should be able to diagnose things from that. And the next is what logs to collect. There are basically just four, like I already said, UCIVA, that's pretty obvious. And second is collaboration. Collaboration is nothing but UCMA that UCIVA is written on top of. Third is web infrastructure, which is our authentication and proxy module, and S4. S4 just monitors all the SIP traffic in Link Server, so you can just collect all these logs for us. Now, with typical web developer fashion, if you guys weren't paying attention, I have a TLDR slide, too long, didn't read. So the gist of the information is basically most of issues, if not all, can be just figured out by just looking at the error resource, right? And the other thing is this is a standard. Like UCIVA was the first web API which was built on the Link Server. There might be more coming. So if you learn about error resource and how to code against it with UCIVA, it'll be the standard pattern you use to talk to other web services if they're coming. And the third thing is our PO, Mr. Alex, is very picky. We will keep investing in this area, and we'll only rest on the day when we probably can give you an error code rich information, like the data center is down because there's a monkey in the lab, right? So let me bring Ganesh for doing the UCMA part.
Prashant. Hey, my name is Ganesh. I work for the UCMA and UCWA team, just like Prashant told. I was wondering how many people have some kind of experience with writing UCMA applications and deploying it. Pretty good. I see some hands go up. So there are some hardcore guys who want to play with .NET APIs, know some SIP, and that's good. So I've been working in the UCMA team almost like last five to six years, and I pretty much encountered a lot of issues while I'm writing my own app using UCMA. So I just tried to capture them in at very high level, three distinct categories is during development, what are the kind of issues that you'll encounter, and what are the things you can do to actually improve your debugging story. Second is during deployment, okay, I have this beautiful UCMA app, what are the issues I will encounter when I actually go ahead and try to deploy it? What are the commandlets I need to be aware of? Even though there's a long documentation on MSDN, you still encounter some issues. I just want to capture the issues that are hit by a lot of developers. And what happens after deployment? So you have deployed your UCMA application, it's running well, suddenly you encounter an issue. How do you go about debugging it? What are the first steps you would do? That kind of stuff. One thing I would say is UCMA, since it's a managed API, there are a lot of APIs. There are a lot of things I will not be covering here, but I've just picked the most common ones. But I strongly suggest you that if you have encountered something that you either did not have an API to do or you were not able to get debugging information, strongly suggest use the forums. UCMA forums and UCWA forums are pretty active. We have a lot of people looking into it. And either one of our team members or a lot of other active members will be able to answer your questions. Okay. So during deployment, I don't see Michael Greenlee. Michael Greenlee is one of our avid UCMA. He's one of the really good UCMA developers. He has a blog. I strongly suggest you read the blog. This is the top three issues from his blog. So these are things like day-to-day, if you start with a UCMA application, you hear this at least once or twice. So one is, hey, I cannot load the SIP EPS DLL. The first thing you want to check is you are using .NET version 4.5. The second thing is you need to make sure your application, change your settings to 64-bit. Then it will magically go away. The second thing you will also hit is that, I have an application. I'm listening for incoming call or incoming messages, but I don't get them. A couple of reasons. One is you have your firewall that is sitting in front of your applications that's blocking the incoming traffic. And if you have the call coming through but the media is not flowing, I would again check the firewall settings because the media can use any port from 1024 to 65535. So you want to check that you're not blocking media traffic through your firewalls. Those are a couple of things to first quickly check before debugging further. And the third thing is about media troubleshooting and quality data. It's actually, we have a new API. Well, it's not so new, but we introduced like 2-3 years back. But I haven't seen many people actually take advantage of this API. It is called Media Troubleshooting Data Reported. It's exposed out of the incoming call. So to improve your debugging, for improving your debugging capabilities, what I would suggest is you actually register a handler to this media troubleshooting data reported. Once you have that handle registered, so after the call is terminated, this event handler will be invoked with all the media debugging capable details. So pretty much what you can do is you can, in your event handler, you can actually look at the diagnostics reason of why if a call established succeeds, it's fine. But if it fails, what is the reason it failed? The diagnostic reason will be pretty much like a pretty big XML blob. You can actually, there's one post in Michael Greenlee's blog about this one where you can just go through the XML and figure out what really happened. So you have an opportunity to actually capture some of the debugging information and print it out so that when something doesn't work, and if it's related to media, this event handler is going to help you debug faster the issue. So some of the things that I frequently encounter during development is, so I terminate a call or I do some operation, but the other side doesn't know what really happened. And one thing I strongly suggest is another class called Diagnostics Information. This is a class where we have specific error codes reserved for third-party applications to add to more to what Link Server already provides. For example, if you're writing an application, typically any kind of end operation in UCMA will have an optional parameter called, for example, if you take call, there is a begin terminate on call, which takes in call terminate options, which will have a diagnostic information exposed out of it. If you take conference invitation, any kind of API, which is an end terminate method, it will have a diagnostic information class, which is pretty much you can say why you are actually doing the operation. For example, you could terminate a call because like if you take a contact center kind of thing, agent just terminated the call, you're terminating the call to the customer. You could say that, hey, I'm terminating because agent terminated, nothing bad to worry about. But you could also terminate because you couldn't find any agent, which is an error case, in your business use case. Then you would say, hey, if it's a common error case, you would use diagnostics number within the range of 61,000 to 61,999, and you say it's an expected failure. And if anything above anything from 62,000 to 62,999, it's an unexpected failure you didn't even expect. So these things, once you start using this API in your code, when you are developing, I'll show you how it's going to help you debug later after you deploy your application. Okay, before I go to during deployment, anyone have any questions about the APIs I just talked about in the previous set of slides? Okay. So during deployment, there are few commandlets you need to be aware of. It's called out in the documentation, but it's not very easy to read. But these, at a very high level, these are the few things you need to remember when you are actually deploying an application. First is, you need to run the bootstrap.exe with the specific parameters specified in the slide to make sure that you can run UCMA applications on a specified set of machines that you want the application to run on. So you can have a pool of UCMA applications. Let's say I'm developing a contact center. You can have a pool of contact center applications so that you can load balance incoming traffic. And on every box, you need to run this one. This is the way the machines that you want the UCMA application to run on will tie back to the Link Server. So Link Server is now aware of all the pool that you have started, so it can route traffic to your application pool. The second thing is you need to say enable CS replica. What that means is, hey, I need replication of whatever the Link Server deployment on this particular pool set of machines that I am running UCMA applications on. Third step would be to actually start the service replica. It's a replication. It's basically starting a Windows service replication service. It's going to make sure that we get the Link Server provision data back to the application, the machines that are running your UCMA applications. So you have a view of the topology inside your UCMA applications. And then there are three sets of commandlets you need to use. One is the new CS Trusted Application Computer. These are the computers you need to enable for the trust relationship with the Link Server. And then you need to create a trusted application itself. For example, if you have a contact center, I would create a trusted application for contact center. And the number of endpoints you want in the particular application. If you have, think of, let's say, Microsoft itself, right? If you have a company, you have multiple help desks, for anything related to benefits, anything related to payroll. So you can have multiple services that are running, and you can have one application endpoint created for each such service. So a trusted application endpoint roughly translates to an application object, application endpoint in UCMA object view, and it also translates to a contact object in the AD view. And the next set of commandlets you need to do is make sure the replication is done. Like, you need to make sure that the replication with the link server is done. There's one get CS management store replication status, which will say true or false on your computer to say whether the replication has been done or not. And there's also, if it's not done, you can forcefully invoke the replication by doing invoke CS management store replication. That will forcefully invoke a replication between your computer and the link server. And finally, you can, all the communications, if you know, if you have written an app on UCMA, all the communications from UCMA applications to link server happens through MTLS communication. And UCMA application to other external entities also happens to using MTLS communication. So you need a certificate for your app, and you can set the certificate by getting a certificate from a trusted authority and setting the thumbprint on your application. And the final thing I would also say is most of, it's kind of related to the way you code as well, is that most of the applications during deployment, something will go wrong in these 6 or 7 steps, something will go wrong. The best way I would suggest is to make use of a provisioning failure exception that we have exposed out of the collaboration platform. You can actually view why exactly the provisioning of your application failed. There is a provisioning failure reason enum, tries to capture most commonly hit provisioning failures. So you could actually look at that. If you log it, you should be able to look at your logs and say, okay, this is why it fails. Go back to the previous steps and do that step and try it again. So during development, I strongly suggest have a catch handler for provisioning failure exception and print out the provisioning failure reason in whatever way you print out so that you can easily take a look at it after you deploy or during deployment. Any questions? I see. Okay, I'll go to the after deployment. I think this is the most interesting thing I wanted to touch base today is this. Okay, you've done all these things. Now, how do you know how your app is actually working? Or how do you know how many errors are happening in your app? Today, Link Server has a monitoring service. It's an optional service. It's not deployed by default. I strongly suggest if you deploy your UCMA application, turn on the monitoring service. The monitoring service is going to monitor all kinds of SIP traffic going from your UCMA applications to Link Server to other clients as well. So you get a comprehensive view of the SIP traffic that is happening in the Link Server deployment. So there's a link I have given. It basically goes into the detail of how to deploy the monitoring service, what are the things you need. Once you deploy, you get back a link. You get back a HTTP link where if you click on it, it will take you back to this view called the monitoring view. The monitoring view, if you notice, there are a couple of things here. It's basically a web interface to a database of monitoring data. You have the start and end date, and you can specify the pool where you want monitoring data from, and there's activity type. The thing that I want to call out is this diagnostic ID. This is the ID that you actually gave in your during development of your application. So if you want to know, okay, how many unexpected failures I'm hitting in a day, you could just do a filter on diagnostic ID, and it will print out all the failures that you've been hitting. The other thing is as well the session category. Here also you can say I want to look at only unexpected failures versus expected failures versus successful terminations. So once you get a particular report, you can actually drill down on the report itself. Here you will see I've just taken a particular failure here. The diagnostic ID is this 24079. If you have your own application-specific diagnostic ID, you can see that here as well. But the important part here is that it actually gives a record of what really happened, including the diagnostic ID and what is the response. So what it says here is that there was an invite that failed with a 400 response. So that is flagged as a failure. And the next thing you could do is click on the detail link, and it will take you to this page, it is a pretty comprehensive view of what really happened. A couple of things to note here is the response code was 415. The request type was invite. And you can look at the user agent. In this case, it is UCWA. But if you notice, you can give your own user agent when you create a UCME application using the application user agent parameter. So that will show up. So you can add a filter when you want to look at the reports. You can just filter based on the user agent. And this is the diagnostic error that UCME will add automatically based on the diagnostic information class that you provide. So a couple of things to notice here is this is the diagnostic header. This is your machine name, machine FQDN. And this is a reason. Reason comes from the diagnostic code. But there's the component which says what is the component. There is also exception. This clearly says there's a MIME type that is not understood. So the diagnostic information class has a key value pair. You can add any information there saying, hey, these are the things I want to add while debugging. So once you have those things, everything will show up in the diagnostic header here. So if you, let's say you develop an app, you deploy it in a customer environment, and they say your app is not working great, or you're having some trouble with the application itself, you can ask for this report. If the monitoring service is enabled, you can ask for this report, and you should be able to look at the diagnostic header. Since you added a lot of information, the diagnostic information to start with, you should be able to get all the details from here. So this is one useful thing. I internally, a lot of UCME applications internally, Microsoft have a lot of diagnostic information. But I also strongly suggest when you develop like a brand new UCME application to make use of this class to add more diagnostic information. And that's pretty much what I have.
In the previous slide, if you noticed, you saw the user agent is UCWA. UCWA is nothing but a big UCME application. So that is how we debug UCWA internally.
Yeah.
So he gave a sneak peek of what we do. So in the Q&A, I just wanted to mention a little bit, UCWA website is nothing but the ucwa.link.com documentation site we have. It is one of the, according to me, in my personal opinion, is one of the best documentation site regarding UCWA. A shout out to Alex who was involved there. And these are all hyperlinks, so you can download the PPT and you can click around it. The second resource that I've added is UCWA MSDN Forum, which is maintained by Kai, Albert, and the people, folks you know. They are very quick. They have an SLA of about a couple of days to answer questions. They are very, very, and you know, Alex is pointing to Shelby right there. He's also in charge of responding in the forums. So please make use of that. And the third is Mr. Shelby Hagman's blog. So it's like a UCWA for Dummies book that he maintained. It's really good because he puts his client shoes on, client developers on, assuming that he doesn't know anything about UCWA, and starts with step by step authentication. What are the different steps in that? What are the issues he hits and how he worked around that? Similarly, you can see that he's slowly progressing to the more complex areas of UCWA. So from authentication, authorization, then you know how to create an application, how to send outgoing calls, and then like anonymous conference joins, everything. So that guy is the man. You can refer to his blog. The next is the UCMA forum, which is again maintained by, I think, Kai. So that has a very similar SLA. And Michael Greenlee, I think, is a very frequent contributor to that forum. They are very quick in answering your questions, across the spectrum of questions. It can be a simple, hey, I'm a new developer trying to create an app. Can you please answer this question? Or I have a contact center, multi-million-dollar contact center app running, and I hit this issue. Can you help me? Every range of question, they'll be able to help you out. And similarly, like Shelby, Michael Greenlee is the king of maintaining a blog regarding UCMA. So please refer to his blog. He's been blogging for the last, I think, 2 to 3 years regarding his problems, the issues he's hit, and how to work around those. So that, and then the last step is Fiddler. I'm assuming most of the web developers use Fiddler, but it's not a Microsoft tool. It's a third-party tool, but it's very nifty tool to use for web development. It you can basically look at the response, request, payloads. It also has a very extensible script-based extension system, so which is extendable by all .NET languages and JavaScript. So you can write plugins saying, hey, if the server responds me with the response, change it before it hits my app. This is like one go-to shop about how to troubleshoot and write your web application. I'm not saying this is the only tool, but this is one of my personal preferences, and I've seen a lot of people use it. I've given the link to the MSDN forum where they explicitly say step-by-step how to use Fiddler, and you can do these around it. So any question and answers? I mean, the answers will come from me, hopefully, but any questions? No? I'm going to assume it's the first part that I presented really, really well, that you guys don't have any questions. I'm just going to assume that. No. Oh, he has a question. Shelby.
You want to use the mic?
Dude.
So my question is about in USIWA, when you're dealing with operation resources or operations that would have operation context, when you pass back the error when you don't supply the value, you say operation context, where the
parameter name is operation ID. That's a very good, that's a very good point. So Mr. Shelby is using the mic to point out a bug in USIWA. So basically, we have a parameter called operation ID, which was originally operation context, but we changed the parameter name at the last second, but we forgot to change the error string name. So we'll take that into consideration and fix. Thanks for embarrassing us in front of everyone. Kudos, but. Any other questions?
I want to see if anyone wanted to just.
The question need not be debugging related. So this guy right here owns both USIWA and UCMA end to end on the Link Server side. So any questions regarding USIWA and UCMA? You got the entire family here. You have the dev lead. You have the product owner there. You have the Shelby. You have Shelby, and you have me. So any questions? Just snap his photo and you can reach out to him anytime.
Okay, can you use your mic? Thanks.
Or you can just tell your questions. We'll repeat the question for you.
Yeah, so after you install the monitoring, so do you need to install the something?
So the question was Ganesh during the UCMA debugging session spoke about this monitoring service. So the question is basically after you just install the monitoring service, do you need to enable it for it to get it working? I'm just repeating the question. The answer is coming from there.
Yeah. So you need to say, hey, start monitoring. But there's a link I just specified in my slide. Actually, if you just go through that, there are like 3 or 4 steps you need to follow. It clearly says exactly what you need to follow. You need to install and then you need to start the service. So it's a 2-step process. But the link actually captures the exact UI you need to click so that you can actually you can never go along or go wrong if you follow the link. Okay, thanks.
Cool.
Oh, there we have one
quick question. So we built a, through some context data in Link, we built a channel so that we can pan and control cameras from the far end or from the near end. The problem that we run into is we can't do it on a multi-party call. We can't say, person number 2, I want to pan your camera.
So you have a UCMA application which you use to communicate to a camera?
Yeah, in a one-to-one link call we can do it.
Okay.
We're able to use the channel and actually control pan and tilt. But the where it breaks down is when we get into a multi-party call. Are there IDs specific to each multi-party?
No. there are IDs specific to multi-party, but what we do not support is that addressing the multi-party directly inside a conference. So for example, if you, I, Prashant, Rashid were in a conference, everyone has an identity, and you can individually use that identity to mute the common conference functionalities like mute, eject, you can do those things. But what we do not have is, hey, have a custom command to say, hey, this endpoint, do something special. It is the normal conference commands we support, but no custom commands in conferencing. But what I would suggest is you can have a back channel in a conference where you, outside of conference, you could have a custom command, and you could send commands to the particular endpoint directly outside of the conference.
You can actually sync with him offline, and he'll be able to give you the detailed explanation regarding that.
Yeah.
Currently, file transfer is not supported in UCIWA.
Yeah, maybe the question was, can we do file transfer with UCIWA mobile clients? The answer is right now no. There are a couple of features that are being like on the top of the stack. One of them is the file transfer. So I think whenever Alex gets to do some work, probably he will.
So your goal should be stop Alex from fooling around in his Mac and get him to do some work. It is in the top of the stack, and we've received this feature request from multiple clients, with internally and externally. So it is in the top of the stack.
Thank you. UCMA. So the question is, does UCMA support file transfer? Right now, no. We do not support file transfer as a first class API. However, we have extension points for applications to add any kind of modality support that they want through the extensions. Oh, okay, she goes first. Yeah, so video is another thing that that's another thing that's on top of the stack for UCMA, because we have had a lot of feedback around how to get video recording and playback in UCMA. So we'll soon get the video functionality working in UCMA. We'll come back with the date of when it will be actually released.
Actually, Albert, do you want to add something to that? Yeah. Because look at his answer right now.
We are currently actually investigating what are the use cases that have the highest priority. There is a person here who is a PM responsible for video called Sentil, and you can pronounce his last name.
Velayudam.
Velayudam. Zentil V. We can spell it on the board here somewhere. And you can set up a meeting with him and actually explain why you need it, because that he's the guy who was needs to decide whether to do this or not.
Actually, Albert had a very good point yesterday. Is whenever you are talking to the Microsoft PMs or regarding feature requests, please try to explain your scenarios to them, because from the platform team, we know that, hey, there are a few scenarios, but we cannot think of all the scenarios. So when you ask for a feature request, it's always good to explain your scenario so that they can understand, hey, this is what you're trying to do. And based on that, they can push the feature request faster or...
Yeah, and also give you a priority. Like, let me give you one example. We are asked a lot now for mobile SDKs. Let's actually first discuss what is then the top priority in a mobile SDK. We can make it as elaborate as we want, but let's see if we can get you unblocked with the top priorities first.
Yeah, exactly. One of the main points is if you explain your scenario, G-Man here or any other person from Microsoft can actually try to give you a workaround if that exists. We can try to consider other alternate solutions which are possible without making any extra features. And if not, we can understand your situation and say, hey, that's the only solution. You're going with the right solution. We'll try to make it happen as fast as we can.
Alex?
You don't get to ask questions. I thought I covered that. So
always repeat the question, please.
Oh, sorry. So Alex asked is when if you're trying to collect some logs for UCWA or UCMA, and you're trying to give these logs, what components to collect and what is the first step. So as I explained, let me go back a few slides. Man, the animation makes it more number of clicks, but. So these are the components to collect, but before. I actually want to show the headers, right? So for UCWA, take a look at the first two headers. These are your most important headers. XMS Server FQDN will exactly tell you which UCWA on which front end you're talking to. Grab that detail, store it in a variable, let's call it X, right? Date is the second header you look at. Grab that, store it in a variable, call it Y. And
the
after
date
that,
will include a time zone, probably GMT.
No, yeah, the date will include a time zone, just copy paste into
But my point is, we've had this with people before. They'll send it to us without letting us know what time zone. And 7 o'clock in the morning in Redmond is not 7 o'clock in the morning in England. So grab the whole string.
Correct.
Including
grab the entire string. Yeah. Don't take part of it. Alex gets mad. So in the CLS, I said, in the partial commandlet, there is search CLS logging, right? It takes in a bunch of parameters, but the only three parameters you are interested in is telling it which server to collect it from, which you can get it from the variable X, which is XMS Server FQDN, what time you want the logs from. And typically, if you take the date timestamp, always as a rule of thumb, just do plus minus 5 minutes or plus minus 10 minutes, right? And then you tell it the components. For UCWA, I have explicitly mentioned the four components you collect, which is UCWA itself, collaboration, S4, and web infra. For UCMA, it is always good to collect collaboration, which is UCMA, and S4. It should be more than enough to give you all the details. That makes sense? Cool. You were not paying attention to my talk. I mentioned this. Yeah. See how he slacks? Cloud support for these APIs is actually, yeah, I'll let him out.
I'm only asking because we have some customers that are using our applications and they're moving to Office 365. We'd like to still have the functionality we're providing them, but we don't seem to have a way of doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the question to repeat it for the recording is that when will UCWA be available in the cloud?
Or UCMA too.
Since we are, as Microsoft, all in and every customer is actually flocking to the cloud. There is not a clear answer to that, but it's inevitable. So, what do you think about that answer? That's marketing.
Yeah, I would never have been able to pull that inevitable word. You would just stare at me. But see, when Albert says that, it's good.
Yeah, but on the other hand side, so you have to realize that UCWA is already turned on, right? Because otherwise, you would not see all those mobile clients be able to connect to it. So,
right. Well, it's
a multifaceted answer that we need to actually work on our side. We need to enable the cross-domain scripting. We need to essentially embed that in the remote PowerShell. We need to take care of a highly distributed execution on the Office 365. So those are all things that we are working on, and it's ready when it's ready.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any more? Going once, going twice. I'm going twice. Cool.
Thanks,
guys.